First of all, hello everyone. Thank you all for coming. It's actually a lot more people than I expected. My name is Mo. I am an inventor and a hacker. I've been working since 2003 as a maker and as an engineer. And I have problems sleeping, like some people here. So at night I learned hacking and I really kind of enjoyed it. So I've been doing this for 23 years now. In 2022, I started realizing that I can make some money out of it. So I just have to change what I'm doing to call it cybersecurity. And I started a career in that and shifted to become a maker by night and a hacker by day. For my maker experience, I have 5 patents since 2020 in robotics, communication, mechanical design, bioelectric sensors, and baby medical pacifiers. As you can see, they're totally not relevant. for my hacking career, I started in 2003. I can't really say most of the stuff I used to work on, but it's all stuff that I'm really proud of and brings me a lot of joy when I remember back these days. In 2022, I came into offensive security, becoming a red team engineer and a cybersecurity consultant. And when I started getting into this job, I saw in a lot of the posts, especially the job posts, the term ethical hacker. I never heard this term before. I always knew a hacker is a mindset. It's not a job or something you have. Kind of like an engineer. An engineer's mindset is a problem solver, somebody who learns how to solve problems. And the tools you learn in engineering schools are the tools to help you solve the problems. Same thing with a doctor. You have they're healing people. But you have to go to school to learn that. But you don't hear ethical engineer or ethical doctor. You have to hear ethical hacker, which really doesn't make sense to me. So I started looking into this, what's ethics, what's ethical hacker, and what does that mean? Well, cutting a very, very long story short, ethics is just a benchmark. So we always need something to reference our actions against or our numbers against. So we have some people called philosophers putting like a benchmark for everything, and then you equate or relate what you did to it and see if this is actually ethical or not. But it just gets very complicated, especially online, and especially with hacktivisms and hacktivists and the gray stuff, because it can conflict with a lot of things. So I started thinking about this and trying to figure out a way to kind of visualize it. And of course, when we angry nerds don't know what to do, we build a tool to solve it for us. So I came up with this idea of a compass, something that I can have running in the back of my mind that can kind of show me whether I'm getting to the better or to the worse. I don't really believe in good and bad. I think it's a very, very elastic term. But I do think there are things that you do that makes things better and things that you do that makes things worse. And it's just a gradual process towards both sides. And this is where I came up with the hacker's compass idea. We basically have 3 bars: consent, intent, and impact. And the white bar is full, the red bar is missing. And if you're going up with the bars are filling up, now you are going into the better. If the bars are going down, you're going into the worse. So let's take this step by step. First thing is consent. Consent is like a voluntary agreement that we all have together for something to happen, right? But in real life, consent is the social glue that keeps people together, that holds a community together. When we have consent amongst each other, we start having trust, and that trust is the basis of building relationships on top and building things and collaborations and all these things. So consent is much, much more than just accepting or agreeing to something. It's just something that we need as human beings so we can function together, right? Going into that, consent is basically broken down into 2 things. So the more famous one is laws, the constitutions we live underneath, the laws we all live by, things that are literally written in black and white. But the other part is social norms. These are the unwritten or unspoken agreements that we have between us, like be nice to each other, don't try to bully people, don't try to be toxic, as people call it. And these are all unwritten rules, right? When you look at it this way, we could start figuring out the difference between like a something that is toxic or something that is illegal, right? So they both dissolve the consent. They both dissolve the trust between people. But when you do something illegal, it's written in black and white. It's very easy to say that this person did something illegal. But when people start having what we call toxic behavior, this is where they're going into the social norms. They're actually breaking these unspoken words or unspoken agreements that we have between us. And when this happens, slowly, the consent starts to fade. The glue that holds the group together starts to fade, and it all fizzles out. So consent is key, but it's not the key, as been written everywhere lately. Because if you think at the most documented lie in history is I've read and accepted the terms and conditions, right? This is literally what we all done billions of times. So most of the times we consent to things that we don't even know what we're consenting to. Can anybody guess what the second most documented lie in history is? Till death do us part, right? When we look at it a little bit further, consent is something that can be very, very easily manipulated or manufactured, unfortunately. And some people here with social engineering skills might have some background on this. There's two books I highly recommend to people when it comes to that. Manufacturing Consent by Noam Chomsky. I think he's popular among some groups here. And he goes exactly how you can build the consent among people or amongst the people, make them agree to something, and how media manipulates this so we actually think we're consenting to something but we don't really know what it is. The other master in this game, but he was a lot more sinister and malicious, was Edward Bernays. He was the founder of propaganda and what was later named PR. Some of his work, like I Want You for the US Army, this very famous poster. That was back in the 40s when President Eisenhower ran for office. His slogan and his campaign promises that he would keep America away from World War II, right? 2 months later, he realized that he has to go to World War II. So he hired Edward Bernays to change the consent among people. The first polls showed that above 72% of Americans didn't want to go to war across the ocean. But after 3 months of his campaign, this number dropped to 40%, and then it was about 80% supporting the war and buying war bonds and all of that stuff. So it's really, really powerful when you look at things this way and realize that the things that we think we are wanting to do or we are accepting can actually be manipulated by somebody else. One of the other tools he used was Disney and Donald Duck. And by the way, Donald Duck got granted the rank of a sergeant by the U.S. Army for all his work in the U.S. military and the propaganda that they were doing. And then he was retired, I think, in the 70s. And this guy is also the reason we think that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. What all our parents told us, he was actually hired by the meat companies because they wanted to sell more meat. So he just told them, okay, we can sell it for breakfast. And he made this campaign. And then now most people around the world think that this is actually a good thing to have, right? Also with the tobacco companies, the seven tobacco dwarfs or giants, as they used to call them back then, they went to him and they said, we're out of sales. Like, we can't sell to anybody else because we're even selling to doctors. Like, even doctors were prescribing cigarettes at the time. And then he told them, yeah, that's easy. We can just sell to the other 50% of the untapped market, which was women at the time, because women were not socially acceptable to smoke. Then he launched a campaign called the Torches of Freedom. And it was all over the news back then. And they expanded the market of tobacco by just making sure that people think that it's better when women smoke, right? So in order to kind of protect ourselves against this, we need to measure our consent to something else. We can't just have it in a vacuum like that. So when we start putting it in a metric with something like intent, right? And we take the social media giants, for example, like Facebook, X, Twitter. They have a lot of consent amongst the people, and we do agree to their terms and conditions before we use their app, right? But the more we know about their intention, the more we realize that when we measure this consent against something else, this is actually something that we shouldn't have consented to in the first place. So by starting to relate things together, we can get a clearer picture of the framework as a whole. Which takes us to the next step, which is the intent, the other part of the compass. So intent goes down into two parts, the goal and the purpose. So the goal is, I'm trying to help these people do this, or I'm trying to do this thing. It's just like something you're trying to achieve, right? And the purpose of it is why you're actually doing it. Are you doing it for fame? You're doing it for money, for bragging rights? Doesn't matter. But I think we should be very honest with ourselves when we think of why we are doing that. We should know the motive behind it. And by knowing that, we can actually try to avoid a lot of things that can be very, very bad in the future. Which brings me to this point, so don't hack yourself. So when we lie to ourselves, we basically have to literally hack our own brains, right? So we have to rewire some things to believe in our lies so people would believe in us. And when we do that, we become vulnerable, like we make ourselves vulnerable. So just be honest about your intent with each other when you're doing something. Just really know why you are actually doing this thing so you don't end up hacking. Sure, please.
Can we have like an example of this?
Yeah, at the end. And there's also a 15, 20 minutes Q&A, like an open discussion, and I would really like to get all your feedback on it because this is something that is ongoing. So the ontological ethics is just a very, very overglorified word for saying that you should only look at the intent of the action and not the action itself. As Immanuel Kant, he's famous for this idea that if you have good intentions to do something, then whatever the outcome at the end doesn't matter. So we should look at it in a vacuum, basically. I think it's good if you're trying to know what your own intention of what you're trying to do is, but in reality, you have to put it against other things so you can actually measure it. And this is one of the longest running nerd battles for philosophers between consensualists, like, so people that focus on the outcome, like it doesn't matter why you did this, what matters is the outcome of why you did of what happened. And some other people say the intention is really the big issue here. I honestly believe it's both, and I think the law also agrees in that. So if you, for example, unwillingly harm someone, like a car accident, and this someone passes away, that is murder, but it's not with intent, so you would get a very light sentence for that. But if it's something that was premeditated and you were thinking about it for a long time, so you show intent, then the judge would give life in prison. So the action itself, yes, it can be harmful, but also the intent of it is very important. So looking at one thing without the other is really not doing justice to the actions you're trying to do. And always keep in mind that the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? This is all the dictators, all the loud-speaking people with mustaches and without, always talked about their good intentions for the life. And it usually turns out to be crap. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. And this brings us to the last point, which is the impact, the consequences of what we are doing, right? We have accountability and responsibility, especially amongst some of the groups here who can be stealth online and who can do things anonymously. It's very easy to just walk away from something afterwards, and this usually creates a lot of trouble. So for example, if you're running a secure server or a network for some people who are running on the ground, activists on the ground, and you just disappear all of a sudden, now they don't have any secure communication channels. Or you are working with a project and you find that it's becoming a little bit too far away from you, so you just disappear into the bushes. This was supposed to be a GIF, but it's not working, so you're supposed to go back into the... The way around this is you try to make informed decision-making, right? So impact is a little bit... has a little bit of a delayed feedback. So after you have to do the action first and you have to wait to see the impact of the action. So there are ways to circumvent that, which is to ask around and seek advice, you know, like go to people here who have some more experience, who have some more knowledge about this, ask them what the consequences of this would be. Maybe they give you an example or an idea so you can just understand what is going to happen. Always, always, always good to have friends next to you, because friends are the only people who would know when you are hacking yourself. So like you tell them, oh, I'm doing this because of that, and they will be like, no, you don't call your ex back in 2 a.m. just because you forgot something, you know? That's only a friend would know that. And the last thing is, it's really okay to push boundaries, but as long as you stay close to it. So like, don't take so big leaps into stuff that you really don't know where it's getting. Just take small baby steps. And stay next to the boundaries. In case something happens, you can always go back to the boundaries. If you feel comfortable, you can push these boundaries a little bit, so you can just expand your boundaries, and so on and so forth. One thing that I learned here in Germany, it was very helpful, is baby steps. So don't take giant leaps into the unknown. Just one step after the other. It builds over, and over time, you would have something sustainable. And one of the other things we should keep in mind is, as a species, we sometimes think we're doing the right thing with the best intentions and just realize how stupid it was. It happens a lot through history. There's a lot of examples towards that. So you can actually have good intent and good consent amongst the people, but the impact can be very negative. So just because we all agreed on something, and just because we are doing it for the right reason, if we're seeing it have a negative impact on the world, or not what we're trying to actually do, we should try to adjust ourselves so we can move into the better, and a little bit by a little bit try to bring up this curve, right? The best case scenario for impact, at least from my experience, and this is from years of doing this, is solid sustainable change. So we all try, especially in the beginning, to make these like big explosive things that attracts all the world and makes a big impact and all that stuff. And what I've learned through the years is just as fast as it goes up, as fast as it's going to go down. So if you make a big impact, yeah, it might be a trend for a few days, but then it's just going to die out. And then now you have enemies on the other side, so it's just going to retaliate. So you might end up making things worse, right? So best case scenario, at least in my opinion, is just to make solid, sustainable change. That would be like trying to lobby and change the laws, or trying to raise awareness so you can increase the social consent among people, or just trying to take these baby steps towards what you're going, so in case something goes wrong or you figure out you're deviating from where you want to be, you can try to readjust yourself before it's too late. And we can give some examples to the compass at the end. So that's that would be a pen test with a proper ROE if all the paperwork and the documentation is done right. It's good intent, it's good consent. Intent is not all the, because you're not doing that to save the world. You might be looking for money. It doesn't matter that much. But the impact of it at the end, you're not hurting anyone. It might be not the best thing. You're not really helping the world, but you did some good work at the end of the day, and that's okay. My favorite example from history was from the 1980s. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to become a hacker when I was a kid. I was really fascinated by these guys. So back then, there was a big fight between governments and universities on one side and hackers on the other side. Companies and universities wanted to make the internet centralized for academics and for governments, so people can only get access to the internet through their schools. And there was on the other side the hackers who were trying to open the internet up for everybody. And these are the people who worked on the www and the https and all these things, so we can actually all connect together. And by the way, this is one of the reasons lockpicking is a big part of hacking culture, because these asshole professors used to lock up their servers in the rooms. And what does an angry nerd do when they can't solve something? They make a tool to solve it for them, hence the lockpicking afterwards. So if you look at it this way, it wasn't so much consent, because they were also doing things that were annoying some people. The intent of it, some may have been doing it for bragging rights, but mostly it was really people trying to make this great new tool at the time, the internet, accessible for everyone. And the impact of it, just imagine what we would have now without www. We would just all have to go to school to access the internet. We wouldn't have internet at home or cell phones or any of these things. And finally, as any compass, it's dynamic. So when you're holding a compass in your hand and you start moving around, the needle is going to point in different directions, right? So you can kind of visualize this and leave it in the back of your mind and just give it some matrices so it just can go up and down, and you can know as you are going how this can lead you to do the good or to do the better. And thank you. We will be taking 15 minutes of Q&A. I would really like to get your opinions on this so we can have an open discussion about it. Thank you.
Yeah, this really deserved some kind of applause. Thank you. Thank you. Great talk. Great talk. So, as announced, we have at least 15 minutes of Q&A. And also we...
He has a burning question since the beginning.
Yeah. There will be a microphone for you.
Thank you. Can I take this home with me?
It's online and it's on Mastodon as well.
No, I meant the microphone.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Yes, can you give a concrete example of hacking yourself?
So, let's say you're doing something to impress other people, right? So, you're with a group of people who are saying they're doing something for everyone. But you're not really in it for the better. You're just really in it for fame or greed or just something else. To fit in this group, you're just going to have to lie to yourself. You're always going to say to other people, yeah, I'm doing this for the greater good. Yeah, I'm doing this for the better. And you kind of have to believe that for other people to believe you. You know, when we start lying to ourselves, we kind of repeat the lie again and again so we can believe it, so other people would believe it, and so on and so forth. And that was what I mean by hacking yourself. It's just trying to deceive yourself, basically.
Next question, please. Yes.
Hey, Mo. Thanks for the talk. I have a question. I guess I don't know about my moral compass. I don't have a lot of friends to bounce like myself off of, and I always question society and authority. Do you have like questionnaires that you can just ask yourself as an individual to kind of help gauge where you are on the spectrum here in terms of like, you know, the chart, the compass?
That's a very good question. One of those things is experience. And unfortunately, it has to be done the hard way. You do things and you figure out what happens afterwards. But as I said, what can help you out with that is places like these. I mean, I asked so many advice from people here that really saved my ass in a lot of situations. So that is one thing. The other thing is if you maybe start to research more about like what social norms are, because it's written in black and white, but just people don't know. Like we all think that we take it for granted, like be nice to each other and all these things. So yeah, this is also a good idea to kind of know where you are with things, and also with the intent again. I think we can be honest enough we can train ourselves to be honest enough of really why we are doing something. And when you understand why you are doing something, it really helps you to know, like, it's the drive, you know, it's what drives you. So we can both go to the same place, but I have a bigger motivation than you do, or you have a bigger motivation than I do. So that's the driver itself. That's like the motor of it. So you gotta be quite honest with yourself about it. And finally, it's all gray. Like it's. I wish it was black and white or easier. It just has to be like something you kind of figure out along the way. But you would like having a compass doesn't really guarantee you getting to some place, but it just helps you as a tool to figure out better. Does that answer your question? I honestly, this is one of my favorite things about these events, because not a lot of people outside places like this understand what we do or like even care about it. So it's not as easy finding like with among friends from school or work, colleagues. It would be harder to bounce these ideas off of them. So hackerspace would be a good start. These places are great for that kind of things. I think there are people here who were working on the WWW and all these kinds of stuff that I was talking about. So they have like decades of experience in that. So yeah, I would start from there, definitely.
Oh, I see at least three more questions. In the back, please.
Yeah, thank you so much for your presentation. I wanted to say two brief things. The one is I would be careful with Immanuel Kant. Hi, I'm here.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, there you are. Okay, sorry.
I would be careful with Immanuel Kant because Immanuel Kant is really not just about good intentions. It's about universally true intentions.
Yes, that is very true.
Which
but
is
I was
much more complicated.
Yes, and
that's
is
my
very
first
true.
Point.
Yeah.
I just think that if you give this, again, just leave Kant out of it, because I think you really don't need him. You just don't need him.
Okay.
And the other thing is, I was wondering if your model doesn't require an internal system of weights. with like what is more important when. Because I was thinking this very way in the beginning, you know, where you said like, okay, people can like manufacture consent. And then I was like thinking, you know, manufacturing consent to like fighting a Nazi like state that is conquering Europe seems to be fine. That's good.
Well, I mean, it is a tool. It can be done for good and it can be done for bad. Like if we want to go down to the philosophy of it, like tools have no good or bad in them. It's the use of the tool that makes the tool good or bad. So manufacturing consent in this way, it can be used for good, as you are saying. But on the other hand, it's a very, very slippery slope and it's a very, very dangerous weapon to use.
But that wasn't my point. My point was I wonder if you need an internal system of weights where you say like, well, maybe it's like more important if like it benefits more people or the right people or if it like prevents this and that, you know, like maybe you should like
that's a very good point.
It's very interesting that I'm the only person that you keep interrupting, but now I'm finished, now you can talk.
Okay, well, sorry for interrupting you, but I thought about this a few times and I thought of adding it to the like things like utilitarianism and stuff like that when you were talking about this. These things do have weight, but they do change with culture and they do change of one person to another. Some things are more important to people than another. And these are all personal things that you can't actually compare because they're all abstract. So it really depends on the person themselves. There is, as I said, like things like the laws. These are black and white. And there are also the social norms. And these are mostly universally accepted laws or universal social norms, as they're called. So, but the weight itself is very, very subjective from somebody to other. Like you would have higher things that you believe in that I don't. So you might believe in some things that give it more weight, and I don't believe that this is as important as you. So it really comes down to the individual. But what is at the end that you can see is the impact of this. So you can see what you're doing has a good impact on people or on the life around you. You actually made things better or not. And maybe this can be a way to adjust your weight system, if that answers the question. Okay, do you have a follow-up?
Okay. This is a good time to remind you that afterwards the speaker will probably still be here and you can still talk and discuss with them. But for a Q&A, please keep it to questions. I think there's a question right there.
Oh. Sorry, I was like, why is someone next to me? Thank you. I appreciate this. First of all, sharing is caring. So let me start from the bottom. I have a question for you. Question: I start with a question and then I give you a short explanation because we are in lack of time. That's good. The question is, what would you from your heart recommend me for my next step? Because I've been working as a nurse for 15 years. And for some reason, in the last 2 years, I had some grief. I started wearing black clothes. Now I have a gray head, and I grew from a nurse to a nerd. But this compass came from my heart. I never knew that I understand a computer. And I'm still following it, but it scares me. That's why I always start with, hey, sharing is caring. So I hope you get my question.
For sharing. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
I think there was a question in the front, right?
Oh.
Oh, well, sorry. For convenience, we'll take the one in the back there.
Okay. Yes, thank you for your presentation. I'm currently working on the topic of violence and ethics. And for my work, I kind of moved away from an intentionalist approach because for myself, I'm like more and more realizing that there's so much violence which can't be captured by an intentionalist approach, like structural violence, where there's seemingly no one who intended the violence which happened. So for my impression was that you kind of just stated, okay, intention matters, but for my personal work, I'd be very interested in hearing some more of your argumentation. So why do you think does the intention matter and in which dimensions somehow?
I think intention matters a lot, and I also think you are you're very right that when you are in an aftermath of a war zone or something that is not very nice happened and then you're there, you really don't care about the intention anymore. And it's just, it kind of becomes relevant, but I do really think it does, because as I said, legally, doing an action with intention is very, very different than doing it without the intention. And like intention is the motive for everything. It doesn't guarantee the outcome, but it certainly at least shows what the person behind this was. Did I get your question right? I would like to hear that. Like, if you have a follow-up, I would like to hear it. Thank you.
Okay. Next question, please.
Yes, I was wondering if you have any literature recommendations.
I actually wrote this as a research paper, but it was very, very long text. But I can post it, sure. If you, I think I can post it with this.
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. So when we're done, I'm gonna try to post it to the to the week.
And do you have a concrete practical example of your own internal moral compass?
That's a good question. I think laws change a lot by time and by place, but I think that things that keep us together don't. So I think being good to other people is going to work anywhere in the world, but the law is going to change from one state to another. So for me, I try to focus more on the social glue, as I was saying. It's the consent amongst people, and the law comes secondary. It's the same with the intent. Now I try to go with the purpose more. I try to focus on why I am doing this, so I don't do it for the wrong reasons. And in terms of the impact, this is something, unfortunately, as I said, you can only get it by experience. Or the good thing is you can ask people for their experiences, so you can get some feedback, so you can avoid going into problems afterwards.
Other questions from the internet? No. Does anybody else has any question more? Any more questions? Yes. A question, please.
So, it's very easy to say people shouldn't hack themselves and basically be truthful about their intentions, but people can find that very difficult.
It is.
So
the
in
most
activism,
difficult thing,
often
yeah.
Someone might say, oh, it's completely okay to smash a police car or to damage something, and then at the bottom line, what you've done is you've done something for your stated goal, but you've also done something else, and the secondary benefit might be what's keeping you in the game. So people can find it very difficult to be truthful about the true motives why they do things. Do you have any ideas about how to solve that problem?
I think this is the deepest questions I was asked today, and I honestly think it's different. Like, it's a personal journey, you know. So, like, move into the direction where you're actually honest with yourself, even if in smaller places, like smaller steps. But I think it's very different from one person to another. But maybe one thing that can help is, like, listen to the voice at the back of your head, because sometimes it says logical things that make sense. And also ask your friends or ask the people around you. Especially the people who've known you for a long time. Because they can know when you're about to do something that's not very smart, and when you are not very true to yourself. So I think these are two good places to start.
Any more questions? All right, then at this point, I think we say goodbye to the stream.
Thank you.